the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock.
Oh, that was really interesting, mate, yeah.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by my psychic and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hello.
How you doing, boys?
Not bad, not bad.
Yeah, good. Not too bad, Windy.
Good. It's been a while, so we thought we'd get together and we talk about the three matches that have happened since we last spoke. So the Newcastle game, the Leicester game, and the Dortmund game. And I think we're going to really start with Dortmund because that's the freshest in our memory, and then we'll drop in comments about the other two matches from there. This was a really, really impressive Spurs performance, particularly the second half, where we were basically untouchable. Bardi, you were at the game.
Mm-hmm.
How was it to watch? What did you make of Dortmund, firstly?
Well, the first thing that was quite nice was Wembley this year has been very quiet and very kind of stale, but there was actually a good atmosphere there. The way the Dortmund watched the football helped as well. But it was a game where everyone was a little bit nervous going in because we'd been scraping results and we hadn't looked that convincing in our previous league game, that there was a bit of anxiety. But after about 15-20 minutes, you could kind of see that Dortmund were a little bit more scared of us and confidence built. And then, of course, getting into the second half and grabbing the early goal really, really helped us.
Nathan, how did you feel when you saw the team sheet for this one? There were some unusual selections, so we say. We had Vertonghen playing the left wing back. What were your initial thoughts?
I now sort of get a bit of a confidence boost when I see an odd lineup because I in these bigger games, because it means that Pochettino has an idea, has a plan. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to come off, but it means that he's thought up something specific for this game and he's prepared to tweak his lineup to face it. And that made me think, okay, well, obviously he always does his homework, but to see it evidenced before the match even starts makes me feel a little bit more positive.
And we previously, against Leicester, we played a back four. We went back to back three against Dortmund. Is that simply, in your opinion, just a case of having more defenders on the pitch because Dortmund are a better team than Leicester?
It could just be that, but I feel that it was more specific to Dortmund and the shapes they take up in position. So over sort of the history, and it's less the case now because we've sort of evolved around it, but we used to really struggle in our first 2-3 seasons against teams who play a back five. We still kind of do occasionally now, in that our model of possession is about occupying five vertical columns of the pitch based on the idea that you're going to be playing against a back four, right? So that you create a numerical advantage in attack. And if the opposition switch to five players across that back line, well, then you don't have that advantage anymore and they're matched and they can mark you man for man or thereabouts. So because Favre plays sort of a not dissimilar thing, I think that's possibly in the plan.
Interesting. And that's so true what you say about us struggling previously against back fives. I remember us having problems in Pochettino's first couple of seasons against Watford and West Ham, who were playing back threes. So I really agree with that point. But Bardi, we had Son and Lucas up front. So Llorente, who played most of the previous games, was on the bench. Was that for a particular reason, do you think?
I just don't think Llorente was that convincing against Leicester. Lucas, for his faults, he's pretty good at pressing. We know Dortmund like to work the ball from the back. And Llorente physically just can't move around the pitch. Even though he's only 33, I was surprised by that. I thought he was older. But even though, for Lucas, doesn't offer much of a goal threat, but he presses better, he moves around better, he can kind of drop into midfield. And it kind of helped us shut them down a little bit as well.
We got to half time, and all the talk in the studio in BT Sport was about Jadon Sancho and how impressive he'd been. And we kind of, in a sense, we'd seen glimpses of Sancho, but he hadn't really done much. There was no kind of end product. He'd had some nice touches, he'd committed players, and then it kind of turned to nothing. And the other thing was, Spurs were a little, let's say, sloppy defensively. So Juan Foyth took a couple of chances trying to bring the ball out from the back. Aurier's touch was lacking in the first half. and we didn't quite look like we had it all together. That changed drastically in the second half, and Spurs really took an early foothold in the game. Nathan, was there anything in particular that you noticed that we did differently in that second half?
So my view of things is that we changed from a two-man midfield of Winks and Sissoko to bringing Eriksen deeper. He was a 10 in the first half. Although he kept dropping deep to come and receive the ball, it wasn't properly a change in shape. And we did make that change, I thought, at half-time to move to a three-man midfield. So Winks sat in the middle, and then we had a three across, and that meant, I think, that we felt more comfortable pushing the wing backs higher, because simply there's an extra man behind the ball, at least centrally, and that can sort of allow the wide centre back to cover out behind the wing back. And I think that Vertonghen and Onori are quickly closing down the Dortmund wingers, you know, not letting them turn or not even letting them receive the pass in the first place, because, you know, once Sancho and once Pulisic is on the ball, that's where the problem starts. So I think that, yeah, we put an extra man in midfield and got really aggressive with the wing backs. And I think you instantly saw that for the first goal, is that there was a turnover in a wide area, and quickly the ball goes to Vertonghen, who's, you know, high up in Dortmund's half, and then there's the cross.
Yeah, I think I completely agree with Nathan's point there. I think in the first half, we were quite concerned about how Dortmund were playing. So Eriksen was pushing up, kind of like what Dele was doing to Jorginho when we played Chelsea. He was up against Witzel, or trying to stop De Hood, I think that's how you pronounce it, on the ball when they got it deep. But as the game went on and they offered less of an attacking threat, Eriksen decided, well, Pochettino probably decided that Eriksen was more influential on the ball than he was stopping the ball, if you get what I mean. But I'd also like to... Sancho was good. At the match itself, I don't know, I wasn't blown away. Maybe I couldn't see the tricks he was doing. He looked okay. Pulisic looked terrible, and, you know, I was kind of a little bit jealous when Chelsea signed him, but I didn't see much in him to make me think that he's a adequate replacement for Hazard, if that is what he turns out to be.
I mean, he's 20, so I guess the idea is that he'll grow into that role. But yeah, I totally agree that there's a lot of room for development for Pulisic. I don't think he's anything like the finished article yet.
No.
Whereas Sancho looks a lot more polished to me, mm-hmm. a much more complete player at the moment, and despite being 2 years younger. Let's talk a little bit about Vertonghen, because Vertonghen played left back against Newcastle, and I thought he played really well in that role. In that match, Trippier played on the right, but for me, where Trippier was turning back and quite negative, Vertonghen was taking forward steps. His first touch was always to get it out of his feet, and he was looking to make lots of those well-shaped crosses that he likes to play. And that was a pleasant surprise that he still had that in his locker, despite being a little older now than when he used to regularly play left-back for us. But this was something completely next level. This was... I mean, there's a difference, firstly, between playing left-back and left-wing-back. Playing left-back is much... I mean, that's much more familiar to Jan, because when he takes the ball from the goalkeeper playing in a back three, he's often essentially taking up some of the left-back positions anyway. Left-wing-back, he's so high up the pitch constantly, he's expected to be aggressive... He's playing a lot in the final third, and I honestly didn't think he had the athleticism to do that in the way that he did. He was absolutely sensational. It was one of the best Vertonghen performances I can remember for Spurs. Not just in terms of his crossing, which was brilliant, but his decision-making, his poise on the ball, his ability to aggressively take his man on and put them on the back foot constantly. Nathan, is that one of the best Jan performances you've seen?
I kind of don't want to say it is, simply because I want to respect him as a centre back, and
right.
But it was brilliant. It was a brilliant performance. Yeah, he sort of ends up playing left back or left wing back sort of a couple of times a season, and the gap between them, you sort of forget how good he is, and you see his name on the team sheet and you go, oh, I don't know about that. But then, yeah, he puts out performances like that. Okay, this is obviously his best one. It trumps the others, but he has been good when he's played there before. And you just think, yeah, like you mentioned, the athletic requirements of the role, you don't think that, you know, he's pushing towards 30 now, and he's a big lad. He's 31. Wow, well, there you go. So, it's surprising.
He was he commented, it was either in this week just gone or the week before, that he feels in great shape and feels like he can play on for a long time. And I think, you know, I may have doubted that without this, without having seen this performance. But for me, that this kind of clarified, yeah, he is, you know, he's got the athleticism of a much younger man and he clearly looks after himself. And I was very, very impressed with Vertonghen. Barney, I'm interested to get your thoughts on Aurier, because you thought he had a good game. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say on Vertonghen, I was totally with you that I thought he was past it. It was a couple, not past it as a footballer, but I thought physically he might have declined a little bit, because I think there's a few games where he's looked like he's been running in cement, but he was brilliant on Wednesday, and I thought him and Alderweireld down that left hand side formed such a beautiful partnership, and it was great. But Aurier, I know he received a fair bit of criticism. But I just think he's better. Well, he is better than Trippier. He does have his issues, but I think he's a closer match to a Pochettino fullback than Trippier ever will be. And he had a shaky opening, which is kind of expected for a player who hasn't played that much football this year. But I thought he combined nicely with Foyth. He did a wonderful cross, and I know an assist doesn't kind of cancel out everything else that went wrong. But I don't think he was as bad as people think he was. And I hope he gets his head straight. I hope he gets his fitness sorted out, because there is a better fullback and better wingback in Aurier than there is in Trippier.
Nathan, where are you with Aurier at this point? I mean, just to add some context, he's 26. He's taken, it, some would say, a step down to come to Spurs from Paris Saint-Germain, although league-wise, possibly not. And he's finding he's not getting, like Barney said, he's not getting that much game time. What do you see as his future?
I'm not his biggest fan. I'm not his biggest fan on the pitch or off the pitch. I think that the fact that he didn't get sent off or give away a penalty against Dortmund is grounds for seeing his game as a success. It's complicated, because you can see his athletic and technical potential, and you can see Pochettino's track record with getting, you know, just ridiculous turnarounds on players. So there's always a part of you that says, you know, eventually Pochettino will get the best possible performances out of this player that he can give. And I really rated Aurier based on his performances for PSG, and that combination of knowing what Pochettino can do and also having seen how good Aurier can play makes you think, you know, surely, inevitably, we're going to see the best of Aurier, and the best of Aurier is a really good right back. But it's 18 months and you're sort of stretching for it. I think, and I'm reluctant to sort of dig into Trippier here, because We've said everything we need to say about Trippier, really, in a way, and he's not, you know, done anything to be ashamed of. But I think the general situation at right back is frustrating, and Aurier is simply just part of that and is drawn into that, and it makes you just go, just chuck them all out, just start again at right back.
Yeah, it's really hard to disagree with that, and it's one of those frustrating things for me, because I see the makeup of the squad, I see the issues we've had this year and potentially going forward with the lack of homegrown players, and I think, is Aurier significantly better than Walker Peters? I don't know at this point. We spent 24 million on him, and I don't see 24 million pounds worth of return there, or potential. I was kind of hopeful after his first season that, like you say, we know Poch's reputation of transforming players. We can see that he's got athletic ability. He's at times shown technical ability. I mean, some of his crossing has been great, but then other times he'll just shank one over the bar or completely scuff one. The consistency levels with his crossing just is not there. The thing that's disappointed me is he doesn't seem that capable of beating a man. And I sort of had assumed that he would be, and that he'd be a bit more adventurous, but his take-ons are way down on other fullbacks. So I'm just not fully convinced that he's the right guy for our squad, and particularly for our first team.
I know, but for the time being, I don't think we have much option, any other option really than play with him. He's started 5 games in the league this year, that's it. So I think if Sissoko can have a monumental turnaround from being absolutely terrible, the level that Sissoko's gone from to is a massive jump from where he's Aurier starting at a higher platform than where Sissoko started. So if Pochettino can make Sissoko one of the greatest midfielders playing football right now, then I still have some faith in Pochettino, the manager, in making Aurier a good fullback.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com, code program.
Let's talk a little about Sissoko. Because as we were setting up to record this podcast, I was reading Alistair Gold's Q&A that he sometimes does, and they're always very interesting. And Alistair's got some very solid Spurs opinions. And they were talking, he was asked about who he thinks the player of the season is for Spurs, and he said Sissoko. And I was a little surprised by that, but I think a lot of Spurs fans would probably agree. Nathan, where are you with Sissoko now? Obviously, we've spoken about him a lot previously, and it's always been with the caveat that he's come from this absolutely horrendous start, and we're almost sympathetic to him now. But has it gone beyond that for you? Do you sort of see him as a real valuable asset in our midfield?
He is an asset in the midfield, you know, and when he was injured, we missed him clearly. But that is all you have to look at the full story. And you know, prior to this season, he was a £30 million player back when £30 million was a lot, who had given us only poor performances. And I'm not having a go at him. I'm just saying. As a whole, that's not a success. And people will be similarly harsh of Lamela, who, yes, has been very good at times, but then has also gone through large periods of time where he hasn't contributed. So I think it's a similar situation there. In terms of player of the season, I think yeah, we'd be coming at it from that sympathetic angle. We'd be looking at it as a sort of a most improved vote, when that's generally not what you're looking for play of the season. I think that Son and Vertonghen both put themselves forward as strong candidates there.
And Alderweireld as well, for me, just sure. His consistency levels have been great. Vardy, what do you think about Sissoko and the player of the season shout?
No, I think Son has probably played the season, but I think Sissoko has found a role for himself as this kind of roaming wrecking ball. This kind of like, he's almost like a defensive midfielder that doesn't sit and protect. He's like a wrecking ball that kind of swings around and just collects bodies as he goes. But as well as that, he's also very clever, and the way he helps out the fullback position, the way he offers himself, always in tight places, and his passing is, you know, it's not the greatest, but it's neat and tidy. And he's also developing the confidence to break the press now by dribbling through the press. He did that on quite a few occasions against Dortmund, where it was getting tight, and almost like Dembele, like he got himself out of trouble with his dribbling. I don't know, I wouldn't call him dribbling skills, but his ability to get through tackles and keep the ball close in range of his feet. So I think he's been a very good player, and I'm at the position now where if he's here next year, I'm very happy to see him remain at Tottenham.
I think we need to talk about two more players in the context of a Dortmund game. Firstly, Wanfoyth. He gave a few people scares in that first half, and understandably so. He's one of those defenders who is very, very positive on the ball. He wants to bring the ball forward into midfield and play through balls, basically, and take players on. It's unusual. It's not a style we've become accustomed to. I love it. I think he's got so much ability. Read a great interview. Again, Alistair Gold wrote a superb write-up of an interview that Foyth did with a number of journalists, where he spoke about the fact that he only moved to play centre-back when he was 15 or 16, and he'd previously been an attacking midfielder. And I think that really comes through in Foyth's play style. He's got such a lovely touch. He can drop a shoulder and beat a man. He's got oodles of confidence. And I really enjoyed his performance against Pulisic. I thought he had the better of him for the majority of the game. And just bringing the ball forward and playing it into midfield in such a stylish way. Buddy, did you feel nervous watching him from the stands?
No, I've kind of got used to Foyth now, the way he plays. Obviously, he nearly got caught once. He did get caught another time. But I think it was a very astute decision for this game. I think I was reading Nathan's tweets before the match about how Dortmund will play, and he kind of got it spot on, that they'll be quite willing to allow our centre-backs to have the ball. So Foyth being one of those centre-backs with time to kind of hit a diagonal pass or work it down the line, it was an excellent game for him to play. I think I mentioned on the Fighting Cock how Twitter's kind of developed into this kind of, you're either Foyth or Sanchez. And it's like, you have to pick a camp. You can't have one or the other. And I think it's quite sad, because I thought they both played really well together. Shout out to Sanchez. Some of his long-range passing was also very good. And I think it's great that we've got two young defenders who were so accomplished. And it's a fantastic thing for Spurs.
Absolutely. And the other player I'd like to talk about a little is Harry Winks, because he's just been superb these past, 6 weeks now. Nathan, what did you make of Winks' performance against Dortmund, but also in the previous games against Leicester and Newcastle?
Yeah, they've been really, really positive. He's added many more defensive actions to his game, but he's also upping his attacking side at the same time. And I think that it's that combination of both aspects that make you think, okay, I think there's something going on here. And I wrote about it for 12. I mentioned it on Twitter a couple of times, but I feel like he... there's just a sudden physical confidence that has maybe been missing, and it makes me wonder about the amount of time he's been out with injury and the seriousness of that injury. And I have to wonder if he has been struggling either physically or maybe just mentally with the sort of long-term recovery from that injury, and that's something that he's potentially now over, and that's why he's suddenly putting in many more tackles. He's really committing his body, he's dribbling more. I think he's just more of a physical presence now. It's quite possible that that's simply a development of his playing or a development of Pochettino's coaching of him, but I do have this strong suspicion that there's something sort of behind the scenes physical going on there.
Bardi, I remember you were slightly sceptical about Winks towards the start of the season. How do you feel about him now?
Yeah, I totally agree with what Nathan just says. He's always been tidy. He's always been, a solid kind of short-range passer. But there has been something that's happened to him in the last couple of months. And I agree with Nathan that it could be mental, it could be physical. But he just seems to kind of want to be in charge of the game now, take more responsibility, break tackles, win tackles. And he's a fabulous midfielder. Someone on Twitter kind of was talking about he doesn't get enough goals or assists. It doesn't matter. He is a very good midfielder right now. And, the injuries to Dier, Wanyama and Dembele leaving has opened the door for him. And he's taken his chance brilliantly.
I struggled to see how Dier could get in ahead of Winks at this point at the base of our diamond. The only thing is, I think Winks does... He says himself that he wants to add goals to his game, and I think in the position he's currently playing, it's very difficult for him to make those regular runs into the box, which I think he was showing signs of improving on. But, I mean, for example, against Leicester, we played with Skip to his left in the kind of the spare man in that midfield. And I think Winks would probably like to play that role in an ideal world, but he's playing at the base of the diamond and doing a very good job there. So really intrigued to see who we sign to play with Winks next season. I think there has to be reinforcements in central midfield. I think we've needed that for 2 years now, since Dembele's decline began. It's essential that we do make a signing, and I'm fascinated to see the style of player that Pochettino targets. Will it be someone who's an all-rounder, a bit like Winks, who can do a bit of everything, can defend but can also, you know, run with the ball or play expansive passes? Or will he go for a more natural holding player who will free Winks up to do a little bit more in the opposition box? I think there are arguments for both styles. I assume at this point that Wanyama is going to leave at the end of the season because he seems pretty broken. I think he'd have played ahead of Skip if there were any chance that he was still viewed as a top-level player for Spurs. But I think we have to assume at this point that he's done.
I just want to... There was an interesting thing that you said just there, that who we signed to play alongside Skip. For most of the season, it's been who do we sign to replace Skip? And I'm
Winks.
Where you... Yeah, sorry, who do we sign to replace Winks? But I'm kind of where you are now, that who do we sign to bring the best out of Winks and play him alongside? That I thought Winks might turn into a squad player, but I think if he carries on like this, he's very much part of our team, our starting 11 going forward.
And I guess in many ways, the best case scenario is we sign a player or two players and we have two or three midfielders who we can either play all together or two out of three at any one time, and that creates genuine rotation and keeps players fresh and stops some of these muscular injuries which we've seen over the past 2 months for Spurs occurring. That would be ideal. Is there anything else either of you would like to say about the Leicester or Newcastle games?
Leicester battered us and we were lucky to come away with a win there. But
how good is their midfield, Nathan?
It certainly carries a huge amount of promise to develop as a midfield. I think they're all 20 or 21. They are good now, but when I look at that midfield, I say, you know, how good is that midfield going to be if they stay together? And now Tielemans is on a loan, so he may well only be at Leicester for 6 months, but all the same, they've also got Mendy, who was due to start but then didn't.
And Mendy is a big favourite of Puel, isn't he? He really likes that guy. I think Ndidi's terrific. I think Madison's got loads of potential. And I think Tielemans had a very, very strong debut.
Yeah.
I really like Harvey Barnes. I think there's something really interesting about Harvey Barnes' play style. And I suspect that he's one that will make England squads over the next year or two. I think there's something there. He gave Trippier an absolute nightmare with his positioning and timing of his runs. Leicester were great, I thought. We won 3-1, but we were very lucky to do so. Having said that, we were hard done by with the Son penalty decision, I felt.
That's true.
So that, you know, that may have changed things. And Newcastle was a bit of a drag, wasn't it? I mean, we struggled to a 1-0. We did create a lot of chances, but mainly from set pieces. It's just nice to see Spurs getting over the line during these difficult times without Kane and Dele. We have a question from Coy's Penguin, who is at Neutral Penguin with a 1 instead of an I. He says, couldn't we consider switching to an old-school flat-back 4 to shore up defensively and just let our front 4 get on with creating chances? And I think this was in response to the Leicester game. Although it makes no sense because we played a back 4 against Leicester. I think what he's saying essentially, though, is let's not push our full-backs on so much. Buddy, where do you stand on that? How do you feel about, you know, the Leicester game, we had our fullback so high despite playing a back four. How do you stand on this question?
I don't think you can do that. The fullbacks are essential to how we play and about stretching the play and giving the overlap option. Just to have like a Tony Pulis kind of style back four who just stand on the halfway line, that's not going to work.
And Nathan, how do you feel about the question?
Yeah, no, I think Barty's got it there. In the modern game, it's you want to clog up the middle defensively, and you want to use the wide areas for attacking. And I think when you look at the fullback role historically, you see them as defenders. But I think the way the game has changed and developed. If you think back to our first season under Pochettino, we had a lot of trouble against teams who played a narrow game because in that first season, Pochettino was actually fairly defensive with the fullbacks. And I think that, if we were to go again and ask our fullbacks to play a more defensive game. Any team who simply clogged up the box would shut us down.
I think that's a really astute point you made there, and it's one of the positions where I feel that the name of the position doesn't reflect what the player does.
In the United States, they call them outside backs.
That makes a lot more sense.
I think in Brazil they call them laterals, something like that. I put an Italian accent on it, but just wide. They're just the wide player that gets up and shuttles up and down.
And that makes a lot more sense to me as well. I feel like this is one role where the name might change. It might evolve over time and someone will come up with something that sticks and we won't refer to them as fullbacks anymore. Because, you know, even having backs in the name doesn't reflect... In a Spurs team, you know, these players are getting on the ball and creating. They're not... Defending is almost secondary now, especially when we play a back three. And the name needs to reflect that, I think. And it might then change some of the thinking towards the fullback position. But, Bardi, you've prepared a fullback episode for us. We're going to do that at some point, and I'm looking forward to talking to you both about it, because I think it's one of the really fascinating evolutions in English football.
Mm-hmm.
Do either of you have anything you'd like to add, or shall we draw it to a close there?
I would just like to give a little shout out to somebody on Twitter that I've never noticed before, but Nathan liked it. Abel Mezaros, I don't know if Nathan knows him, he wrote an interesting blog on the Champions League game, which it's on Medium. It's quite a nice read, lots of images, and it's a... If you want to check out the game, go read that.
Nice. Cool. All right, let's leave it there. Hope you've enjoyed our catch-up episode on the past three games, particularly the Dortmund game. I loved watching that match. The second half just had me just beaming. It was so fun to watch. So I hope you've enjoyed us talking about it as well. And we'll be recording again soon. So keep your ears out for a full-back episode in the very near future.
It's the fight in.
Interesting, mate, yeah.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.